You're listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration, a podcast dedicated to helping software executives stay on the cutting edge of sales and marketing in their industry. Let's get into the show.
Hi, welcome to B2B Revenue Acceleration. My name is Aurélien Mottier, and I'm here today with Nick Buxton, founder of Committed to Growth. How are you doing today, Nick?
I'm great. Nice to meet you, Ray. Thank you.
Nice to meet you too. So today we'll be speaking about unlocking budget to grow revenue. That's an interesting topic in the market at the moment, with the budget being a little bit wobbly, but you know, yet something super, super important to discuss. Before we get going, Nick, it would be super useful if you could share a bit of background about yourself and Committed to Growth.
Yeah, super. That's brilliant. And thank you for having me on, Ray, and everyone at the team. Great podcast, and there's some amazing people that I really look up to have been on. Benjamin Dennehy, Pete Crosby, Guy Rubin, Chris Ritson, who I know has been on recently, is a close friend. So that's wonderful. So thank you for putting me up alongside such great names. My name's Nick Buxton. I studied engineering at university, so I come from a bit more of a technical background than most sales and revenue leaders. I fell into sales, like most people, in 2008 when there was a recession on. I'd finished university, and the only engineering jobs were going were at defense companies. And I thought working for a weapons company would sacrifice my morals and my moral compass. So I didn't want to do that. I wanted to go down the virtuous and altruistic road of sales. So I found myself in sales 12 years later, haven't looked back, loved it. Amazing skill set, amazing journey from fantastic people. Started off selling cars and worked my way up through individual contributing, top biller, team lead, head of sales, CRO. What we're going to talk about today and my role most relevantly at the moment is I'm a founder of my company called Committed to Growth. We specialize in helping scale B2B software businesses. So that actually just means increasing revenue in a few different ways. Currently, I'm Chief Revenue Officer for Ocular and Head of Sales and Marketing for BuzzRadar, which sees me with a load of different hats on. And I visit and sit in with a load of different businesses all the way from seed up to Series B at the moment. That seems to be my sweet spot at the moment. And as a result, I spend a lot of time with founders and leadership teams, helping them unlock growth strategies while they've got budget restraints, while people aren't buying as much as they used to be. And it just seemed like a really good topic to sit down with you and talk through.
That's actually my first question, Nick. You know, I kind of preempted that in your introduction. I think it's fair to say that a lot of the people I'm speaking with at the moment in lots of different space, so it could be B2B tech, or it could be, you know, on the other front, on the buyer front of technology, everybody seems to be experiencing a little bit of softness. Let's put it that way. I don't like the word starting with the big R, but there is a little bit of softness in the market. Q4 was not great for us. Q1 was not too fantastic either. However, we've seen things really picking up in Q2, which is always interesting, but I don't think we're fully back to normal. So I guess my first question to you is, how can organization prioritize their revenue growth initiatives when they work on a limited budget, or when they work on budget that may be changing once every quarter to adapt with the market? And that's probably more for the seed one, the smaller one, that need to be a little bit more responsive to what they're spending and how they're doing. So, yeah,
definitely. And on the macro point you mentioned there, Ray, I do feel like things are looking more positive across the clients I work with and some of the specialists and analysts that I talk to. What I think we've seen is the impact of the soft economy on the new business pipeline, people making decisions, budgets being changed, headcounts being removed or moved around. I think that's played out on new business, and I think we're finding our new rhythm with what that looks like for most businesses. Mm-hmm. What I think we haven't seen is that effect on the installed base. So the businesses who are lucky enough to have had a good cycle selling installed base, 12, 24, 36-month contracts, I don't think we've seen yet the churn hit those businesses, because those impacts on headcount budget will also impact businesses who have got renewals, upsells, expansion plans, and those won't come to fruition until we get to the end of those contract cycles. So I think the businesses who are selling those types of products are going to have another headwind or a bit of a cold to catch when that happens. What's going to happen when that comes around? They're going to want more pipeline, more marketing, and more new business. So I think, especially for Offeratics, that's probably going to be like a good time for you guys to be helping them understand what their new business requirement is to cover that revenue gap.
You know, for us, it's those times are always quite useful in a way. I want to measure my words because in a way we are lucky, but we don't do it in a malicious way or whatever. But even during COVID-19, I was there working in the same industry in 2008 and 2010. So we've seen a few ups and downs in the market, but definitely so the last few big ones, which were 2008, 2010, COVID, and like more recently. What's interesting with this one, with the recession, is that people are trying to do more with less, but the companies are surviving and thriving, but it's kind of all that vision on getting the investment coming. You need to increase your runway of investment. So basically, I guess what people are doing, I was trying to find my words there, but they are trying to extend their spend versus accelerating growth, if that makes sense. So they compromise in a way rapid growth for we're gonna carry on speaking to prospects, we're gonna carry on building pipeline, but at a slower pace. And then we have seen a lot of people who are trying to bring things internally. And it's interesting because we've had clients in Q4 that have brought things internally and they are now coming back on the phone with us and say, hey, we started to develop a BDI SDR team internally. God, we had like 3 turnover already in the team. And, you know, we had to rebuild the team twice in 6 months. We didn't realize how much of a pain it is. And when we look at the cost of it, actually with the recruitment costs, with the cost of doing nothing, so the cost of missing opportunity and all that, you are actually pretty much the same as doing it ourselves. But we saw that we will save much more money by doing it ourselves. But then you've got to buy the Zoom info, you've got to buy the sales loft, you've got to buy the technology as well around it to build a tech stack. And when you put all that together, you don't have a ton of differences. And so we see people coming back to us, but it's almost feeling like what you are saying about the renewals, we kind of eat it in Q4, where we had that headwind of people saying, you know what, we love you guys, but we would like to do it ourselves. And by the way, we're going to recruit some of your people, which will let happen. So they recruited some of our team, brought it in-house. But then things happen and it still doesn't work. So they kind of give it back to us and say, you know what, I've got the headache. I just want to give me the pill. I want you to be the angry prophet into my headache, right?
And yeah, and it's something I see play out with a lot of the founders I talk to is, we obviously had a huge macro change in the amount of investment available. So it's moved from that growth at all costs, just throw money at it and we'll take whatever revenue we can get, we'll take whatever meetings, we'll close a deal, even if it's a short deal, even if it's a deal that we think is going to churn in 12 months, we're just going to close it. To this much more considered, let's look at cash, let's look at durable growth, let's make sure that we're hiring the right people and retaining them and signing the right accounts so that we can expand them and make sure we've got headroom to grow. And these aren't just, you know, software or small business challenges. If we look at some of the stats, 38% of businesses fail because they don't have enough runway. 2 challenges. And 35% fail because they don't have product market or go-to-market fit.
Yeah.
So those are the 2 biggest things we're fighting at any stage of business growth. Runway and maintaining product market fit. And it's not just small businesses. Bigger businesses have this, but it just takes longer for the effects to be seen because they've got much more runway. They've got much more cash to see it off. They haven't got the hand to mouth that small, more entrepreneurial businesses have got. And we're seeing it play out on a global scale at the moment with Twitter.
Yeah.
Great brand, early mover advantage, huge installed base, but they've lost product market fit. Despite having a new founder with lots of money, you've got a disruptor like Threads coming in. And disruptor is a funny term for someone who started.
It's more like a copier. I've been on Thread because I wanted to see what he looks like. I mean, okay. Well, you don't get the same feed. You get some different things, but it's pretty much a Twitter, I'm sure. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly that. And so the 2 main things we've got to battle at the moment is durable growth at a runway that's reasonable, and also maintaining the signs of product market fit. So how do we boil those down? And what are the mistakes we see? Not being able to access the right budget to hit revenue targets. Products and revenue alignment, I think, it's probably one of the biggest ones. We could probably do a whole podcast session on that. But also, not enough clarity between the leadership team to make sure all those three things come together. But the first one, not being able to access enough budget to hit your revenue targets. And in that, I think there's a couple of things, just as a starting point. You've got to align the revenue goals with the rest of the business. And it's a really obvious thing to say, but like, is the C-suite on board with the revenue goals that we've got for the amount of marketing we need to spend? Often there's a big gap between them. It's a really hard thing to say, actually, we're probably not going to hit that thing. It's a really brave thing to say, I'm not going to hit that number, but we feel much more confident in this one and we're going to do it at a lower cost. And once you've got those things, it makes a whole lot more achievable.
Yeah, so you can have teamed up nicely with my next question about sales and marketing communicating their need for increased budget allocation to support their initiative. So what I'm a big believer in, I'm glad that strategy actually worked out for us. We had a fantastic 2021 and a good 2022. But the reason why 2021 was fantastic is because when COVID hit in 2019, what we say we are not going to stop speaking to prospects. And we're going to try to help them without charging them if we can, by giving them information or chatting with them or, you know, discussing about what they are doing and how they're doing more with less and what it means that their team that was in the office now is working from home, what technology they are using, what technology are we using, et cetera, et cetera. So really trying to give, but also trying to carry on conversing with those people.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we did that. And to be honest with you, being in the C-suite with a few of my other C-suite people at Operatix, the first time we had that conversation, well, I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit too much of a dream and it won't come to fruition. But we went for it, and it's probably one of the best things we've done, because when the wave of COVID was over, or maybe not over, but when people started to feel tired of it and wanted to come out again and go back to the business and say, okay, well, let's live with it now and let's stop worrying about it. We really did well. And we did well, but not because we had a better product, not because we had better salespeople after COVID was finished. It's because these were people calling us back saying, hey, you remember the conversation we had 6 months ago? Well, now we are ready. So I guess my point to you is, and you work with a lot of those organizations, so how do you help the sales and marketing leader to potentially ask for more budget or even any budget or keeping their budget to support their initiatives?
Yeah, 100%. And I love hearing that as well, right? Because it justifies the confidence in that's the right people. They will buy from us and we can help them. We just need to make sure that we're at front of mind when they're ready to make the decisions.
Yeah. And
that's one of the key things that I see again and again is the level in which you invest in keeping in touch or still keeping the lights on and prospecting or marketing is up for debate. Like that should be debate. But it's only underpinned by a really good, clear understanding of your ideal customer profile and you'll be able to do those things. There's no point doing it if they aren't the right people, whether they've got budget or not. So I think that's one of them. To go back to your other question, it's about prioritizing the change by cost of acquiring customer or the cost of acquiring revenue. Boards, investors, VCs, they don't care as long as there's more revenue today with a better margin than yesterday. Whether that's from upsell, cross-sell, new logos, increasing average contract value. There's so many levers you can pull. But you've got to make sure that when you're expressing that strategy and looking at the things you need to do, looking at cost of acquiring customer, how long does it take you to set up a partnership channel? A really long time. Longer deal cycles, expensive people. Look at SDRs. How long is that going to play out? There's so many different ways you can do it, but it's got to be driven by the cost of acquiring customer or the cost of acquiring revenue.
And do you think that cost is increasing? That's kind of leading me to another topic altogether. I was on the phone yesterday with one of our major clients. I probably can't really mention their name. I can't remember what we've got in our contract. But without mentioning name, we were speaking about events, and they are driving events. They've got roughly around 25 events across the world that they do every year. and they've been using us to drive traffic to those events. This was an initiative that they stopped post-COVID, and they are restarting. They basically restarted in October, November 22, so perfect timing. But we've been helping them, and in fact, we've been doing okay, so it was a good call. However, what we were saying is percentage of conversion being a little bit all over the place. And they were saying, look, this is not just it. This is also all over the place from our Salesforce perspective when it comes to closing business. So we are losing deals at the contract stage. We would never lose deal at the contract stage before. We are having less conversion from proof of value to contract because... So it seems that deals are getting in there, but there is also a bit of abandon in the process. And it would beg the question of, and I know you spoke about alignment of product with the market, but I think it's about alignment of the product and the budget that you need. So do you need more budget to sell the same amount in this current market? How do you see this? What do you see in your market? What do you see with the people you are dealing with?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'll take that two ways. First way, the conversion rates and the pipeline metrics that they've been using for the last 12 months to look at how they convert stuff that we're sending to events and the SDRs would generate for them aren't the right metrics. You need to look at the thing with recession, it changes so fast. You need to relook at your revenue model conversion at each stage of your sales cycle to make sure that you've got a more relevant close state. So, of course, close rates are always all over the place, but you need to take the average of what's happened in the last 3 months, last 6 months, so that you've got a better idea of what you get out of that event, what you get out of that SDR. So I think that's the first challenge is people are missing targets, not just because the revenue targets are high, but because the conversion rates are different. They're built off a revenue model that was probably built last year at the end of 2020. Those metrics aren't right. Like, it needed revisiting, and that's the biggest thing that revenue teams have got to do. And the second one, I don't know, it depends on the types of events and marketing teams, but they need to be much closer aligned with sales in terms of the goals of signing up to those particular activities. They are going to have to spend more. But that's the decision they've got to be comfortable with, because they're not going to have the same conversion metrics that they thought they were. However, what's the cost of not doing that thing? Like, you're not comparing it against last year. You're comparing it against now. It only looks expensive because you're comparing it to something that happened before.
Yeah.
Not that's happening now. What's the cost of that pipeline? What's the value of that pipeline to you now? Is it that value we're talking about today? Because that's what you need to compare it against rather than a metric further down the line.
Yeah, agreed with you. And at what stage of the sales process would you see people, the usual, the average Joe, investing the most? Would you see them like top of funnel, or is it more about recruiting salespeople at the back end? Or, you know, you also mentioned something that is very interesting about existing customers. I know that we always speak about, hey, what do we do about winning more business when times are tough? But I think there is thing that's much easier to speak to your existing customers and actually see what you could do for them, with them, to keep them for longer. And if you've got the cash flow yourself, maybe you can extend their payment terms. Maybe you can do things of different nature. So that's a topic that maybe we can approach later. But from an acquisition perspective, what do you advise the average person in front of you, which could be a revenue leader or CEO or finance director, to actually put more investment in sales? Would it be top of the funnel, middle, or closing type of roles?
Yeah, good question. Again, it's a huge market shift. The traditional model of repeatable revenue, Aaron Ross, all of those great models of SDR-led, outbound, big teams, conversion rates, not being where you need them to, but just hitting a number, is gone, like we talked about. We need durable growth, which is efficient, really well-trained teams, better conversion rates, and lower cost. So the journey that I'm seeing play out more successfully with clients of mine and also colleagues who work in similar businesses is a leaner sales team and a leaner marketing team that focuses on better quality leads. So if we're having this conversation today, Ray, and we were talking about Operatics as a new enterprise, I'd be a proponent of more mid-market, mid-funnel,
yeah,
and marketing. We don't want to be selling the concept of your product. We don't want to be proving the concept of your product. We want to be taking people who understand the concept and converting them into why is it that you best suit their requirement. Mm. Not selling the entire concept, because that takes time. And if they're already in market, we want to convert them. So that would be my advice if everything else was equal.
Great. And coming to the existing customers, what would be the spotlight that you put on that? What would be your advice for people who are listening to us would be revenue leader? Because again, I think even from a marketing perspective, sometimes it's not that they are left out, but people tend to do less. There's a focus on new.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a fool's folly, isn't it? Like, we all know new business is great. It's a lever to growth. But the thing about customers are, if you can do a really good job with customers, they solve two problems: churn and they buy more. So if we're chasing efficiency, customers are the crux of where we need to be spending our time. They also help us maintain product market fit, go to market fit, all of those really good things, because hopefully we're a bit more intimate with them. We know what they're interested in. We know what their pain points are. So I'm a really big fan at the moment of a strategy that puts the installed base first. We're not looking at crazy new business targets. We just want maybe two or three new logos a month, a quarter, whatever your business requires. But you've got to stick close to the clients. In the Twitter example, if they'd have paid more attention to their customers, they wouldn't be where they are now. They were just chasing new things, new logos, new acquisitions. So I'm a big proponent of looking really hard internally at the installed base for revenue opportunities, case studies, collateral, because it all comes out of the installed base. If you've got a happy customer, the business will find itself. It will look after itself. It will generate more revenue. I know that's like, it's probably a bit hippie, but I genuinely believe that. Like, if you do a good job, your business will grow.
And also, speaking to customers, I think it's for me, it's sometimes about getting the sentiment and the intel. So if you speak to a customer and say, look, we're having a hard time, it's good to know, because you know why you sit with them. So you don't think, oh yeah, because you could actually deliver great quality service to that customer, but they're having a hard time. And that happens to us, where we've got people saying, look, we love you, but we've got to do something else, or we've got to stop. We just can't carry on. We can't finance it or whatever. So it's not a good news.
It's a relationship, isn't it?
It's like, yeah, it's about knowing. If you know, you can do something about it. If you know, you could potentially suggest something to them, or you can find a way, or maybe you reduce, or you halve, or you try to be a little bit more nimble. And if you find three or four of them, maybe you just do like a little bit of syndication of stuff. If you've got clients, it can be. We've had two clients that are, I don't think they were suffering too much from budget cuts or whatever, but they wanted us to be more efficient. And they said, well, how could we get more? We'd love to get more. The team, our salespeople need more, but we can't invest more. So come up with ideas, right? That was the assignment. And one of the ideas we come up with, we said, look, your solution actually fit well with those guys, and those guys were also clients of us. So let us have a chat with them and a chat with those guys, and you address pretty much the same ICP, the same person in the ICP, and let's see if we could agree. And obviously, we'll have to sign some paperwork, because GDPR, privacy, and all that sort of things, and non-disclosure agreement and all that. And we'll have to see if we can start sharing information between campaigns and coordinate with each other, so the intelligence that we collect on one conversation could potentially be used by the other person, and vice versa. And we saw a 30% increase on those three campaigns in terms of delivery. Yeah, because you also have people that were just one person working on one campaign. Now you start to have colleagues. So I think it just created a good atmosphere. It created a good... It's a sort of thing that you need when times are tough, you know, go back to like human nature of doing things for each other, right? And I think it created a good spirit. And now they're having technological partnerships that are being discussed for integration, for APIs, for actually doing it properly between them, which is fantastic.
Love that.
But it's sometimes difficult to do more with less. I've also had clients who call me and say, hey, you know what, Ray? Budget, we're going to get cut by 20%, but we need to deliver 50% more output. And my first reaction to that is just like, look, which, do you really think that I was having a foot on the gas and one foot on the brake while we were working with you? No, I've got 2 foot on the gas, right? You can't go further. You can't go quicker particularly if you pay less.
Yeah.
It's going to be difficult. So, and that's why you need to be creative. And then the larger the organization you work with, so the three that I describe are quite nimble organization. I would say Series B, Series C startup, very agile, more relaxed about stuff. Obviously, when you go to a very large organization, which some of our clients are, a vast majority of our clients, in fact, are relatively large, but it's much more difficult to get them to move. So they want you to be creative, but you can't because you've got all those constraints. But I want to pick up something that you mentioned earlier on. It's been in the back of my mind while we were speaking about some other stuff. So you mentioned that, you know, the sales number. So basically the data that you had around your sales cycle from 2020 to 2021 is kind of obsolete now because we're kind of in the uncertainty and you, but in that case, how do you use data and can forecast if you are like in that uncertainty? And I don't know if I'm asking you an impossible question to answer, but I don't know if you've got tactics or things that you've developed, but when you've got uncertainty, I'm gonna get that right. I probably need a coffee by now. in your numbers,
yeah,
that may be led by the market, but maybe led by some other stuff, but probably led by the market, so slightly outside of your control. How can you actually provide a forecast? Do you take a conservative approach? Do you like the last 3 months run rate? How do you go about it, or what would you say to the people you advise, Nick?
Yeah, firstly, it's always a forecast, right? It's our best guess attempt at predicting what's going to happen in the future. And we have some very bright people all around the world doing this for weather. We have it for traffic. We have it for insurance policies. And no one gets it right all the time. So the question then becomes, below that, what are the assumptions that we've made to come up with this prediction? So I'd firstly be very clear on whether it's your leadership team, your CEO, or the board, bringing them on the journey of, this is a really difficult time at the moment. I think no one's got their head in the sand. We are predicting what the business is going to do. And these are the assumptions we're making. This is the close rate that we've seen over the last, I don't know, 12 months or for the last 2 years. This is what we've seen in 6 months. And this is what we are thinking is going to happen now. So everyone on board, this is what we're thinking is going to happen.
Yeah.
Within that, we are thinking we're going to get efficiency, or we think the market's going to do X, Y, Z, so that you've got some understanding of what's behind that top line number. Because it's too easy for people to be like, well, that's the number, without really appreciating what happens below it. You need an understanding board. You need an understanding, because otherwise people get transfixed on a thing without understanding what's happening in the business.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, we had to, so far as I'm asking you the question, because we are a bit bigger stage. You know, we maybe 2 years ago we had pretty much nothing, but now we get to the stage where we have a proper finance team in place, and they were able to work with our sales team to build an integrated model. And what we realized that the only thing that we did not get right in the first 2 quarters of this year that we are fixing now is a downsell element. So technically, clients are not churning.
Oh, interesting.
But they are downselling. So they said, no, I don't want to stop my contract with you guys. But instead of having 3 resources in North America doing East, Central, West, I need to go down to 2 resources or to 1.
Mm-hmm.
Or instead of doing 5 regions in Europe, I need to boil it down to UK, France, Germany, where we really have the big team. Or, you know, lots of swapping, but kind of downsizing versus going. And that's the only thing that we didn't get right in the model. But then the model is being fed by the actual weekly activity of the sales team to update the forecast.
Nice.
To update what's going on, okay? Yeah, it's nice now, but while we are testing the model and stuff, it's been creating a few interesting conversations within the business and set the wrong expectation at times, which was painful, but, you know, and that's very difficult to produce. And I'm talking about it, but I think I've got a massive advantage with Operatics because we've been going for 11 years.
Yeah.
Right? We have not really changed our ICP. Our sales cycles are relatively straightforward. Our solutions are relatively straightforward. We've been adding a little bit to our solution, but everything is relatively straightforward, and we've got lots of data. We've gone through COVID. We've got data that we know what happened in 2008, 2010, and all that. But still, creating that model was a real... we had to push the stone really hard. And I think it's difficult. I think you're right. I think you almost need to get... What you are saying is almost getting a consensus of people and saying, look, we will never get the right exact data here, but we've got to agree on some number. We've got to make some assumption. This is what it was 6 months ago. This is what it was 12 months ago. This is where the trend is going. This is the two-way, three-way it can go. Let's pick the middle one and let's focus on that. And then we measure as we go and see. And that makes sense.
It's 100%. And yeah, it's difficult to have empathy within our own industry, but I look at it from a few different ways. Like, you'll see it with software businesses, like product roadmap is a really good example. The product roadmap will be defined when we're going to hit milestones, when we're going to hit these things, when we're going to send that product out, when we're going to ship it, when you're going to be able to download it. It's never hit. Mm. It's never hit. And that's okay for product. Like, that's just something that happens in product land. There's so many things to control. And there's a lot of like sympathy around it. But if you do that in sales and marketing world, it just doesn't have the same flow. Well, you didn't hit your number, Nick. Well, you know, these things happened. Technical debt, these things, it just doesn't fly, which I love, because you also have this, you get to make it more interesting decisions because you're so close to the pound and dollar value at some businesses compared to product. But what I do find is that a lot of businesses don't get that right because they aren't aligned internally between revenue and finance.
Yeah.
I'm happily enough lucky to know Simon, your finance director, and some other great finance leaders. Revenue and finance have got to be bosom buddies. They've got to be in each other's pockets. They've got to be working together. When they apply for budget, I want to come with Simon to you, Ray, and say, Simon and I are presenting this to you. This is what we think is going to happen. This is the pipeline. This is the effect on year one. This is the effect on year three. Simon, do you like to present anything? And we do it together. Rather than me coming and Simon sitting there going, well, actually, Nick, have you thought of that?
Yeah.
It's not a team. It's not cohesive. It doesn't show you that you should have trust in this idea, Ray.
Yeah.
So that's one of the biggest things. I feel like it's spiritual, strategic, and tactic. Like, spiritually, I need to be aligned on the visions with the finance lead. Strategically, I need to embody all of these things that he wants to present and he wants to do for his year, whether that's a completely new go-to-market, whether that's an SDR tech stack. There's no way that's going to happen if we don't do it together. So, and I think that's different for different sizes of business, right? So smaller, it's going to be quicker, less important to have all the detail in it for a smaller business. But larger, you're probably going to have something that's more stakeholders, more detail, and that we're going to have to present to you on a formal basis. But I think those two things have got to be in place for you and the board to say, actually,
100%.
I think that middle ground of worst case, best case is where we should be focusing on. And then you've only really got to focus on, is the strategy right? Is it being executed, or are the people wrong? Like, those are the three things once you've set the strategy of what needs to be measured.
And speaking about that, what needs to be measured, any key KPIs that you think are more critical than other to look at to measure the effectiveness of your investment, you know, going back to what you've invested? Because I also have an issue with that. In fact, I had a conversation with my team this week where we had a business case. So on paper, they did exactly that. So I had a technology guy coming with Simon, coming with someone else, with my CEO. So we've got a plan. We're going to get that solution in place. And if we get that solution, we're going to cut this one and this one and this one out. So technically, it pays for itself and increase efficiency. Do you want it or not? Well, let me think about it. I've got nothing to lose here. That's fantastic. Okay. But what happened is that we put that solution in place and we get kind of kept the other thing. So it's basically having a Volkswagen Golf, a BMW Series 3, and Renault Clio in your garage. Okay. You pay insurance, road tax, everything on them fully, but you actually take your push bike to go from A to B. Okay. So you're paying for the cost of it. And it's okay if you are rich and you don't care because you've got lots of money, that's fine. But I think at one time you need to become resourceful. We're like, come on, guys, we've got to. 6 months later, we're still using all the solutions. So we need to really bring them back together. And I think this is something that we're not really good at because we do the investment, but then we kind of forget about it in a way. It's like done. And then it's 6 months later, and you say, hey, what about that stuff? And you go back and say, oh, shit. You know, all those KPIs are tracking. So any KPIs that you think are particularly important for you or any methods you can keep track and make sure that, okay, the investment is made, but it's not just getting a stamp on saying yes for the investment, making sure that the investment is actually bringing return.
So what do you need? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a good one as well, because there can also be a lot of naivety on like getting those things signed off as well. And I mean naivety in the most wonderful way of like, oh, if that thing doesn't work, we've said to Ray it will, and our credibility is in the toilet. So I'm not gonna really go after measuring that thing and flag something might not be right or it needs tweaking. So I feel like at like a spiritual level, there needs to be I say spiritual, not like religion. I mean like a deep human level. That everyone needs to be comfortable that strategy is never wrong. Financial models are never wrong. It's the inputs. It's the inputs that need to be revised. So when you're looking back at something you put in place, did we make the right assumptions, or are they slightly more or slightly less? That's all that's happening. There's never anything wrong with a strategy or a financial model. It performed perfectly. It's the inputs that need to be analyzed. So once it's signed off, going back to the original question, I like to think about leading and lagging indicators. Less simple analogy, new bit of software for outreach, for SDRs to use to reach contacts. What are the leading indicators that we could use that this is working? Traditional stuff, click-through rate, response rate, book meetings, meetings to opportunity. They are leading indicators, i.e. it should happen before we know that we've generated more revenue, which is the goal of this project, of doing that thing. Okay, right. Well, we're going to measure that from now until 3 months' time, which we think it's probably half our sales cycle. We've got a 6 month sales cycle. So we're going to measure that and see how it's doing in 3 months and decide on whether that's working, whether we need to make any changes. Next 3 months, let's see whether anything's changed. And then once you start wanting to close deals, it's then lagging indicators. So what did we close? What was the buyer persona? How long did it take? What's the product usage, utilization? Are they the right ICP now they're signed compared to the rest of the install base? Do we want them as much as the people that we've already got? So I think those are the metrics I'd think about if I was getting something new signed off.
Makes perfect sense. Nick, I want to thank you so much for your insight today. Very good to chat with you. Particularly on the last question, just makes me think about a few things. In fact, while you were speaking, I was sending an instant message to some of my team, so we need to look at that and just... so that's good to see, like, it instant impact. So good on you, Nick. If anyone would like to carry on the conversation with you, you know, either around the podcast or, you know, some of the things that you are doing work-wise, what's the best way to get hold of you, Nick?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Ray. That's really kind. Love this. I'm on LinkedIn, so Nick Buxton, the company's committed to growth. So if you put those two things, you should be fine to find me. There's some interesting resources on my page. There's also, I really like some of the operatic stuff around pipeline generation. So if you're thinking about how much pipeline you need to generate and building business cases, there's some good content on the operatic site. But my takeaways from today, if anyone wants some, ensure you're really clearly thinking and outlining your go-to-market. Before you like build a business plan, make sure it aligns with some of the pillars under your go-to-market. Develop those relationships with your finance team. Before you do anything else, make sure that you two are singing from the same hymn sheet, got the same strategy, and you can help each other. Understand that product and go-to-market fit doesn't end. You don't have it and then just forget about it. It's something you need to work on. So spend more time with your clients, spend more time understanding what they need and different ways of supplying it to them. And own all aspects of asking for a budget. Don't be ashamed if something didn't work out. Just own it. No one is going to be upset or like concerned more than just being forgotten about. Just take it on the chin. What are you going to do about it? And move on. But thank you, Ray. That's been a load of fun.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Nick. Thank you.
You've been listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.